much for taking the time. I appreciate it. I feel like I watched the documentary. I listened to your podcast. I've been like, I feel like I've been in this like Buffy, like aura for, so it's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. I'm really sick of myself this week.
Yeah, I can imagine. Does it get hard? Do you like talking about yourself? Do you hate it?
No, I don't hate it because there's always somebody to talk to. If I was talking to myself, I'd get real bored.
Yeah. I host a radio show, so I talk to myself often. So I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
How does it feel for you to have a documentary now come out about your life?
Well, you know, there was another documentary in 2012 done by Joan Prowse. That was great. And Blair Stonechild did a biography about me. Right. And then Andrea Warner did a biography about me. So like I say, I know a lot about me by now. It's good. It's good. And what's nice is that they were all different.
Mm.
Quite different. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how is it, especially working with Madison Thomas on this one? How was that experience? Oh,
just wonderful. We just all got along so very well. And what made it real easy is that Andrea Warner, who's a very well-known music journalist, feminist journalist in Canada, she had written the authorized biography of me. So when White Pine came to me and asked, you know, did I want to do another documentary? Originally, I said, no, not really, you know, enough scrapbooking already. Anyway, Andrea wound up being the writer. And between Andrea and Madison Thomas, who's our director from Winnipeg, they just did, I thought, a wonderful job, you know, of doing something quite original, quite different, things I would never have thought of. So it's really nice.
Yeah. When you say they said things or like show things that you wouldn't have thought of, what do you mean in that way? Like, what makes this one different than ones you've seen in the past?
Well, I think partly it was that Madison's real young and has a fresh approach to things that people of my generation or Andrea's generation, you know, they may already have heard that, but Madison's take was different. And Andrea, working with Madison, brought out things that I never would have thought of. For instance, Andrea, it was Andrea's observation. She thought that I had been erased. Mm. And I had never thought of that. I had never thought that, you know, between show business competition, you know, not wanting you to get a shot because their artist is going to get a shot, that kind of thing. And, you know, having been under FBI surveillance in my career, having, you know, kind of been drowned in the U.S., she thought that that was erasure. And I had really never considered it. I just thought, well, singers come and singers go and things change. But yeah, I learned some things about that.
Yeah. And you didn't even know that you were blacklisted, right? Which is so insane.
No, they don't tell you. They don't tell you.
You don't get an email being like, you're now officially on the blacklist.
Oh, no, it's all done in secret. As a matter of fact, some people will say the government blacklisted me. No, the government had nothing to do with it. The government would mean they'd have to pass an act of Congress against writers, singers, outspoken people. No, it's all done in secret. You know, an administration like Lyndon Johnson administration, Democrat, or Richard Nixon's administration, Republican. They both just have guys in the back room making nasty phone calls to the networks because their constituents are, you know, just don't want Indigenous people or anybody else interfering with their complete control of all available lands and natural resources. So it has nothing to do with government. It has only to do with business greed. Yeah. And it's done through politicians, but not exactly by the politician. So it's the same old, it's been going on for centuries. You know, that kind of stuff is not new. And you just have to continue doing your thing, whatever it is, whether you're in front or whether you're in the middle or whether you're behind, you know, it's your life and you do with it as much as you can every day.
Yeah, totally. One of the things that I learned, because I've learned so much about you throughout your career, but one of the things that stuck out to me in this documentary is just how quickly things really started working out for you when you first got to New York. It seems like it kind of just took off.
Yeah, it kind of did happen fast for me. I never expected to be a singer. I was a songwriter with a degree in Oriental philosophy and teaching, and I thought I was going to India. But then I couldn't go, and so I thought I'd try my luck at singing. And I went to Greenwich Village in the 60s, you know, student activism every place. The music scene was somewhat vanilla in that it was, you know, preppy college groups, the Highwaymen, and things like Michael Row the Boat Ashore, which was very much not me. And I was not singing the Woody Guthrie this land is your land, this land is my land, obviously. I wasn't singing that one. So it was the American songbook going on. Mm. And so it was not quite ready for songwriters yet, but I was a songwriter. Bob Dylan was a songwriter. He sent me over to the Gaslight Cafe, and things happened for me very fast. Robert Shelton of the New York Times came down and heard me and gave me a great review. And the Gaslight put a big poster outside the venue. You know, it was a coffee house. Mm. And so it was quite different from a booze house.
Right.
It was talk, listen. Underage people can get in. It was not like 21-year-olds trying to get drunk and sniff coke. It was before all of that. It was coffee and a little pot. That's what was going on in the streets. And a whole lot of intellectual exchange, music exchange, world music. It was a very exciting time. So I think I arrived at just the right moment.
Yeah. When you see yourself, and you say that, when you see yourself blow up like so quickly as you did and see how your life played out, especially looking back on it in a documentary, do you feel like it's almost a sense of like fate? Do you believe in like a higher power, like manifestation? Like what do you credit it to? Hard work?
All of that, really, including a higher power. And I believe I have a degree in Oriental philosophy and religion. That's how much I love hearing about anybody's connection to the creator, whatever you call it. I'm not a person who subscribes to big, thick books about this German philosophy or that German philosophy. It's mostly a sense of being connected to the creator that I'm interested in. And as a creative person, I believe we're made in the image of the creator. That's our green light for creativity. We're supposed to be creative. We're not supposed to just sit in the past and try to do whoever was having a hit last year or whatever was popular last year. We're supposed to be ripening and moving forward all the time. So that kind of says it for in answer to your question about a higher power. I do believe, but I don't believe in really the institutions that we all build up when we think we know something. So I don't know any more than anybody else, but I do believe in creativity, in the creator, in the creation. I think the creator evolves as each one of us ripens. And I think that creative people are really lucky to be able to hold on to their creativity past childhood, because I think we're all creative as children and then we kind of forget it.
Yeah. In the beginning of the film, you speak on that kind of, you say there's two things that you were told that weren't right, that you couldn't learn music and that you were not Indigenous. And then you said those things could have ruined you, but they didn't. Why do you think that they didn't? Why do you think that you just turned that other way and went into that?
Because, I mean, I would go to school and I found out as an adult, I'm dyslexic in music symbology. Like Einstein was dyslexic in certain math symbology. Well, anyway, so I couldn't learn how to read music. So I would be in music class and I'd fail because I couldn't read European notation. And so I was told I couldn't be a musician. I was shunned and shamed. I was not allowed to be in a band. I was not allowed to be in chorus. And then I'd go home and I'd sit down at the piano and I'd play fake Tchaikovsky and anything I heard on the radio. So I would just laugh my little fanny off. How can they say I can't be a musician? I'm already a musician without your doggone lessons. Yeah. So also the same teachers were telling me, no, you can't be Indigenous because there aren't any more around here. This was in Maine and Massachusetts. Yeah. So what I found out was that, you know what? Sometimes grownups are wrong. Mm. Sometimes the world is wrong and you're right. And that's a very important thing that people don't tell you. Business doesn't want you to know. Grownups don't want you to know. Authority figures don't want you to know. It's just a silly, obsolete pecking order thing that we don't really need anymore, that kind of peer pressure and, subtle bullying. So it did not derail me, because it was just, I would go home and how I realized that they say that I can't be a musician, but guess what? So something that, a couple of quickies that I always pass on to people. Some will tell you what you really want ain't on the menu. Don't believe them. Cook it up yourself.
I love that.
And then prepare to serve them. So it's all three of those steps. Don't believe them. Cook it up yourself. And then prepare to serve them. So it didn't make me mad. It just made me glad that I had the kind of mom who said, you know, I don't know much about Indigenous people. I don't know anything about music. But when you grow up, you can go find out for yourself. So lucky me. Yeah. I had a great mom.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, they don't make that realization that other people don't know what they're talking about until they're adults. And then when they become an adult, they think like, oh, everyone is just trying to figure it out in the same way that I am. And you, in a lot of ways, in so many different aspects, it seems like you were just so ahead of your time, like decades ahead of your time in so many things. Do you consider that yourself? Do you feel like you were ahead?
Well, I think it kind of is obvious about certain things, and people keep playing that up. So yeah, in certain things I was, I had different kinds of opportunities. I came from a different kind of background. I did not drink the pecking order Kool-Aid that most of my, most of the people in folk music, their parents were in some kind of business. So they really had a corner on the business. I didn't know anything about the business. So I made a lot of mistakes, but because I wasn't really, part of the obvious school of fish, I was kind of swimming around by myself out here. And I did not have a huge career in the middle of my career. You know, I had a huge career, then it kind of went away. I didn't know I'd been blacklisted. And then it came back and then it went away, kind of like the Bee Gees. I've had several careers.
Totally.
So yeah, certainly with regard to Indigenous stuff, I mean, when I first went to Greenwich Village, you know, like I say, the American Songbook was very vanilla. It was, you know, people were talking about civil rights and you know, African-American people, and but nobody was talking about Indigenous anything. And when I was talking about genocide in terms of the North American Holocaust, I mean, people just, the comment was, oh, the little Indian girl must be mistaken.
Right.
They just thought, oh, she must be mistaken.
Yeah.
They weren't even willing to get into an argument about it. You know, they just didn't address it at all. So it was total gaslighting for many years, until Truth and Reconciliation in Canada anyway, just presented all of the information in a bulletproof way. Names, dates, serial numbers, what happened, who did it, and how we're going to make things better.
And that was such a long period of time until, because that's just happening now. How throughout that time do you not just become so frustrated? I feel like I would just be mentally exhausted from having to try and teach people constantly. How do you keep spirits in that kind of way? Yeah.
Well, in the first place, even as a school teacher, you don't scold the student for not knowing.
Right.
That's why you're there. So something big that you would hear about because it appears in headlines. For me, I live through the next day and the day after and the day after and the day after. And I keep on doing whatever I was doing that led up to it. So I just, whenever there's an opportunity for me to do something that I love, adore, support, want to happen, I just go for it. So I might not be on the road doing concerts, but I'm probably at home writing and painting and thinking and having the world happen to me. So I think it's probably just the idea of being very easy with my childlike sense of creativity. It just keeps me interested.
Yeah.
And I don't carry around grudges. I just have no time for that. The pecking order puts pressure on everyone, but life in a circle doesn't. It's real different.
I've heard you say that you still are writing. Are we getting another Buffy album down the line?
Oh, I don't know. I never know that.
No.
But the way I see, I just don't live within that kind of record business, show business template at all. Never have.
Yeah.
The way I've done it is when I have a whole bunch of songs, which is usually always, I don't release them until I want to go on the road.
Right.
See, it's thinking about it differently. I'm not going to go to a record, please, you know, let me make a record. And then you're a slave forever and you had not realized how hard it is to go on the road. So I wait until I want to go on the road. And then I make an album with the best people I can find. And so far, so good.
There's a lot of artists that will say, like Dolly Parton is an example of that, where she'll, people ask her about political issues and things, but she says, oh, I don't want to talk about that. How do you feel about just artists in general who have this platform and have so many eyes on them, but then just choose not to speak on important issues?
No, I totally respect that.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, I advise it. As a matter of fact, if you don't know what you're talking about and you're not real and you don't really care, it's a big mistake to get in front of a camera and try to come up with something when really you're not that well informed and it's not your main thing. No, I really love it that people who do know what they're talking about and have something to share, I love it that they do that. Because a lot of people now that we have the internet and everybody can kind of be on television, I mean, everybody in the world wants to have impact. And very few get a chance to do that, even in their families. You know, they get bullied and pushed around in high school. They get bullied and pushed around. Everybody's trying to have impact. And some people don't quite know how to do it yet. Some people are shooting off their mouths before something has occurred in the head. And, you know, we just have to forgive each other for that for a few minutes. Everybody's growing and ripening. So, no, I don't get discouraged. I see things that I think are terrible, but I'm quite content with my own personhood being able to do as much as I can on every given day. And then, you know, tomorrow's another day. So I keep at it all the time, but there's not really a sense of pressure.
Yeah, for sure. And there's, I think that's a good reminder for a lot of people in like comment sections of posts. I feel like everybody tries to get their two cents in, which goes back to people, not everybody knows what they're talking about or is educated on the topics at hand. So definitely.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But it's not something we should scold people for. We should invite them just to do things, you know, better, more targeted, more on point.
Really? Yeah.
Make sure it's true. And I got another saying too. It says, keep your nose on the joy trail. And that's another thing that people don't encourage you to do, but you should.
Yeah.
You know, we're all being groomed just to be cogs in a machine, and it's not working out right now. It's not the end of the world. Human beings have had problems. We've had bad leadership. We've had bad weather. We've had all kinds of things before, and we've survived. But when it comes to your personal day to day, you take care of Brother Mule. That's your body. You know, try to eat right. Try to sleep right. You know, just kind of outsmart the bad things. Take advantage of opportunities when you can put your two cents in. For instance, with Indigenous people, I'm always saying, you know, people say, you should be proud you're an Indigenous kid, but they don't give them anything to be proud of. Well, how's about team sports? How's about letting kids know, like in hockey season or football season or whatever, that team sports originated on this side of the water? Team sports, there was no team sports in the Greek Olympics. There were no team sports anywhere except in the Americas, throughout the Americas. We invented the rubber ball, the stadium with goalposts on either side, protective equipment like shoulder pads and hip pads and helmets with animal logos. The games themselves are universal. Sports is so universal. It's like food and it's like music. These are three things that everybody can appreciate.
I did want to ask you before I let you go, looking at your life in this whole way, in this documentary, any accomplishments that you're most proud of?
Gee, I don't even know if the documentary covered it, but the thing that I'm most proud of in my life is that I started a scholarship foundation in the 60s. And I found out many years later that two of my very earliest scholarship recipients had gone on to become the founders and presidents of tribal colleges.
Wow.
In their community. So what I'm most proud of is that it's not even something I did, but somebody else took this gift, which is a small gift for me at the time, and they maximized it beyond my wildest dreams. And I don't see how you can do any better than that.
Yeah. And that makes so much sense for it to then continue on in so many ways.
Oh. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Keep your nose on the joy trail.
Yes.
And some will tell you what you really want ain't on the menu, but don't believe them. Cook it up yourself and then prepare to serve them and watch what they do with it.
Exactly. Have you given a lot of thought to your legacy and what you want to pass on?
No. People keep telling me what it is, but I don't know. No, not much. No, you know, it's like when people come to any artist concert, different people expect different things. Some people come to hear my love songs. Some people come to hear Indigenous songs or Universal Soldier or Up Where We Belong. And then somebody else in the audience has a total different playlist. I don't know.
Yeah.
Help yourself, though.
I love that.
Something for everyone.
Hopefully. Buffy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. You are such an icon. So this is so great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shannon. Thanks so much.
Awesome.
See you guys.